meeting with the city of Samuel last week, Doug took us through really Samuel being called by the Lord. And at that point, Samuel recognized, I think, there was going to be a lot more to
what he was going to do versus what he'd seen. So, what I'm, and this week was really to talk about him restoring Israel as a restorer, a reformer. But I want to, there's some background that goes on between where we left off, which is in chapter 3, and where we're going to pick up in chapter 7. So I'm going to flip through some of that. I pulled some of it out. They're short chapters, but I want to talk about them a little bit because it kind of ties into some of the things we heard in the first three chapters. Some of those things come to pass in these chapters, and chapter 7 doesn't even talk about it. So, in chapter 4, now the Israelites went out to fight against the Philistines. The Philistines camped at Ebenezer. Ebenezer is in the area of just north of Dan. You have Judah, you had Dan, and you had Ephraim. And so it's in Ephraim. And the Philistines at Aphek. The Philistines deployed their forces to meet Israel. And as the battle spread, Israel was defeated by the Philistines, who killed about 4,000 of them on the battlefield. When the soldiers returned to camp, the elders of Israel asked, "Why did the Lord bring defeat on us today before the Philistines? Let us bring the ark from the Lord's covenant from Shiloh so that he may go with us and save us from the hand of our enemies." Who picked the fight? No, the Israelites picked the fight. The Israelites went out to fight against, from Ephraim. Ephraim's right on the border, going into where the Philistine people live. So they went up on a border, and they massed up on a border. What was the spiritual state of Israel when that attack occurred? They provoked it. What was their spiritual state? Not too good. Okay. Eli was the priest. Had the two rotten sons. Samuel was still pretty young. He was doing what he was told, and now he was beginning to show that spiritual leadership that they hadn't been getting from the temple. But how well were these people focused towards God? He spoke to Samuel.
Yeah, just Samuel, but not to Israel.
And not to Israel, but he spoke to Samuel. And Samuel spoke to Israel. He's been speaking what he's heard to Israel. But overall, as Clayton said, their spiritual state is pretty sad right now. Who'd they blame for getting beat?
God.
God? Why'd God let this happen to us? So what was their solution? Let's go get the ark. Any flaw in that reasoning?
God's not at your beck and call.
Exactly. God's not at your beck and call. They were using it as, let's go get the super weapon. And when we get the super weapon out, we'll beat them. So it was a tool. It was a tool. Okay, we get the best tool, we'll win. So the people sent men to Shiloh, and they brought back the Ark of the Covenant, the Lord Almighty, who's enthroned between the cherubim. And Eli's sons, Hophni and Phinehas, were there with the Ark of the Covenant of God. When the Ark of the Lord's Covenant came into the camp, all Israel raised such a great shout that the ground shook. Hearing the uproar, the Philistines asked, What's all this shouting in the Hebrew camp? Camps must have been close, right? There was a lot of shouting. How many people do you think were in that camp? Take a guess. Take a wild guess.
Thousands.
Thousands. Did you say a thousand or thousands? Thousands. There were thousands. And we'll get to how many thousands there were. So who was there with the ark? The two rotten kids. Okay? Well, there, yeah. And they came along with the ark, too. What did they have to do to get the ark? Special way, you can't touch it. If you touch it, you'll die. But not too much, really. They just went and got it. How did they regard the ark? How did they feel about the ark? Did they approach it with reverence? Football game, okay. How many of those thousands, and this is an answer I don't have an answer for, but how many of those thousands do you think came year after year to offer sacrifice at the tabernacle where the covenant was and the ark was that were sitting there? Okay. So now they've got the A-bomb, they think. Hey, we're going to win. We're going to beat the Philistines. Yay! That's kind of where they were thinking. So, when they learned that the Ark of the Covenant, this is the Philistines, of the Lord, had come into the camp, the Philistines were afraid. Not too bad, thinking. A God has come into the camp, they said. Oh no, nothing like this has happened before. We're doomed. Who will deliver us from the hand of this mighty God? They are the gods who struck the Egyptians with all kinds of plagues in the wilderness. Be strong, Philistines. Be men, or you will be subject to the Hebrews, as they have been to you. Be men and fight. So the Philistines fought, and the Israelites were defeated, and every man fled to his tent. The slaughter was very great. Israel lost 30,000 foot soldiers. The Ark of the of God was captured, and Eli's two sons, Hophni and Phinehas, died. So they had the Ark. What happened in the past? They knew the past, didn't they? The Philistines knew about the ark. They knew something about the ark. They knew about the Egyptians and what happened there. They knew there was real power associated with that ark. But there was a problem. They were using it as a tool. So how'd they react from the sound from the camp initially? How did the Philistines react? They were scared. They were ready to leave. Okay? They said, yeah, you're right. I heard stories about this God. This God's powerful. This God's a real God. He can do real stuff. So they knew of the ark, didn't they? They knew something about the ark. It's actually God that took them out with Moses and the Egyptians, but they knew something about the ark. How'd the battle go? Depending on which side you're on, Philistine side, how'd it go? Real good. Okay, that ark didn't play any role at all. If you were an Israelite, how'd it go? Real bad. How many people were killed? 30,000 foot soldiers. So you know there probably was 40, 50, 60, maybe 100,000 people in that camp. It was a lot. And the ark didn't do them any good at all. What else was lost? The ark. The place where God comes. The place where they offer their sacrifice. Outside. And then go in and offer sacrifice to the mercy seat, right? The Day of Atonement, remember that? Every year? Let's move on. 4. After the Philistines had captured the Ark of God, they took it from Ebenezer to Ashdod. They carried the ark into Dagon's temple and set it beside Dagon. When the people of Ashdod rose early the next day, there was Dagon, fallen on his face before the ground, before the ark of the Lord. They took Dagon and put him back in his place. But following the morning, when they arose, there was Dagon, fallen on his face on the ground before the ark of the Lord. His head and his hands had been broken off and were lying on the threshold. Only his body remained. That is why to this day, neither the priests of Dagon nor any others who entered Dagon's temple at Ashdod step on the threshold. In the last part of that other chapter, Kevin may have to get up here and finish this class if my voice goes away. But at the end of that last chapter, after the battle, one of the men ran all the way back to Shiloh, which is a long run. And when he got back to Shiloh, Eli was there. And he said, "What happened? How did it go?" And he said, 30,000 men were killed. Your two sons were killed. Eli was okay with that. And he said, and the Ark of the Covenant was taken. And Eli fell backwards and broke his neck and died. So now the temple only has one person at it, doesn't it? Who? Samuel. Eli's gone. The two rotten sons are gone. And Samuel is there alone. And Samuel has a relationship with God. What is Dagon? Kind of, I've seen some of them. It's a fish god, and a lot of the pictures had it as a fish god. Some had it as a crops god for the crops. Had a lot to do with fertility.
Philistines,
yeah, they were right on the coast, right on the Med. They're to the west of Israel, is where the Philistines lived. Was there a message? Who sent a message?
The real God.
What's the message?
Dagon's gonna bow down to
me. Yep. All gods, anything else, I'm more powerful. I'm the supreme God. Nothing else is. And it's kind of interesting, they did it twice. That must have been really spooky, like a Twilight Zone episode or something. When they walked in there that first morning, and the statue was laying down in front of the Ark of the Covenant. And they went, "Well, how'd that happen?"
You know, something too is kind of silly on the side. In Isaiah, God laughs at people because they carry around statues.
Mm-hmm.
And here they do it twice. They carry it back up and knock it down.
He knocked it down again and knocked off the head. And he knocked off the hands. I don't know how many hands Dagon has, but however many he has, knocked them off and put them on the threshold. In other words, going into there so they couldn't miss it when they walked in. And that really got their attention. I don't know if they glued them back together again or not. They probably did something like that, but they didn't have super glue then, but they probably did something. The Lord's hand was very heavy on the people of Ashdod in its vicinity. He brought devastation on them and afflicted them with tumors. When the people of Ashdod saw what was happening, they said, "The ark of the God of Israel must not stay with us, because his hand is heavy on us and on Dagon, our God." So they called together all the rulers of the Philistines and asked them, "What shall we do with the ark of the God of Israel?" They answered, "Have the ark of God of Israel moved to Gath." So they moved the ark of the God of Israel. But after they had moved it, the Lord's hand was against that city, throwing it into a great panic. He afflicted the people of the city, both young and old, with an outbreak of tumors. There's five major counties, states, or whatever you want to call it, associated with the Philistines. And so the first one it went to was, it's up there, Ashdod. And the second one is, it's up there, Gath. Okay? What else did people do to people who were old in the ark? Okay, he crashed down the god. What else did he do? Infected with tumors. Okay, and I guess this is the kind of tumors that spread enough where they were dying. People were dying, young, old, children, men, didn't matter. Did the people of Ashdod figure out what was happening? Were they right? Yeah. Anybody ever play hot potato? Well, they're playing hot potato with the Ark of the Covenant right now. What was their solution in Ashdod? Yeah. Send it somewhere else. What wasn't part of their solution thinking at this point?
Give it back to Israel.
Give it back to Israel. It wasn't in their thought process right now. They had this thing that was overlaid with gold and everything else and supposedly all this power, and we're not ready to give it up. Let's just move it somewhere else and give it to somebody else to be their problem. So they sent the Ark of God to Ekron. As the Ark of God was entering Ekron, the people of Ekron cried out, "They have brought the Ark of the God of Israel around to us to kill us and our people." So they called together all the rulers of the Philistines and said, "Send the Ark of God of Israel away. Let it go back to its own place, or it will kill us and our people." For death had filled the city with panic. God's hand was very heavy on it. Those who did not die were afflicted with tumors, and the outcry of the city went up to heaven. So it didn't stay very long in Gath. It didn't stay very long in Ashdod. Now we're on to the third, if you will, state within the Philistines. So when it didn't work out of Gath, what'd they do? Sent it to Ekron, okay? Still within the boundaries where the Philistines were. Work any better?
Actually, it looks funny is the people heard about it before it got there.
Yeah, word had gotten around. The people at Ashdod, the people at Gath, had talked to people in the other three states, if you will, the Philistines, and says, "You wouldn't believe what it's like to have this thing." And all of a sudden, it's coming through the gates of Ekron. They're going, "Whoa, stop! This is bad." And people started dying. They knew what they were talking about. Did the rulers really want to let it go? One of the two counties two areas I haven't talked about too much is probably where most of the rulers were. So they were sending it around to the other parts where they weren't, because they didn't want to let it go. We won this. This is, if you will, this is something we won in a battle. This is a prize over Israel. Yeah, a few people are dying, but they're going to die anyhow.
Yeah, it's common sense. They see it as being contagious.
Huh?
They see it as being contagious.
It is. And it's God saying, "Okay, you think so. You think you have me captured? Watch. Watch what happens to you." When the Ark of the Lord had been in the Philistine territory 7 months, the Philistine called out for the priests and the diviners and said, "What shall we do with the Ark of the Lord? Tell us how she would send it back to its place." They answered, "If you return the Ark of the God of Israel, do not send it back without a gift. By all means, send a guilt offering to them. Then you will be healed, and you will know why his hand has not been lifted from you." So this, I skipped a couple of things, but they'd figured out, we need to get rid of this thing. And they've already come to the conclusion that we've got to send it back to Israel. Now, how do we do that? How hard is that? How hard should that be? I would think just take it back. So how long did it stay there in the Philistines? It's up there. 7 months. Took them 7 months to come around to the idea that says, "Hey, this thing's killing people and we need to get rid of it." It took them that long to come to that conclusion as the rulers that we need to get rid of it. And up until that time, it'd just been killing people. What was their conclusion they reached in dealing with the Ark?
Holy people, but they were priests, and
Well, they went to their priest to ask what to do, but what? How about it's more trouble than it's worth? It's a whole lot more trouble than it's worth. Let's get rid of it. Let's give it back.
Let's pay to get rid of it.
Maybe, yeah, let's pay to get rid of it. Maybe if we give it back, it'll afflict the Israelites. Who knows what's going on in their heads? Think they needed to send a gift? Can any gift compare to the ark? No. Come on. And what it turns out to be, if you want to read the chapter, I think it's a whole bunch of gold rats. They're the image of a rat, and it's made out of gold. And they put some other things in there. But they put those kinds of gifts in there. So it cost them some money and like that in order to have it go back.
That's pretty standard for pagan beliefs, though. You got to appease the god. You make some kind of a, even though it's not their god, that god has inflicted this on them. They need to do something to get back on his
to get back on his good side.
Yeah.
It's interesting also that they're doing this to protect Dagon, their god. Tells you what kind of god it is. Now the people of, that's Shemesh. So this, I skipped quite a few verses here because this went through to say what we're going to do, what we're going to put together, how we're going to do the gift and everything like that, and what we need to do. So they've figured it out and they're sending it back. So now the people of Beth Shemesh were harvesting their wheat in the valley, and when they looked up and saw the ark, they rejoiced at the sight. The ark came to the field of Joshua of Beth Shemesh, and there it stopped beside a large rock. The people chopped up the wood of the cart, sacrificed the cows as burnt offerings to the Lord. The Levites took down the ark of the Lord, together with the chest containing the gold objects, and placed them on the large rock. On that day, the people of Beth Shemesh offered burnt offerings and made sacrifices to the Lord. Five rulers of the Philistines saw all this, and then returned that same day to Ekron. So, they got it in. Beth Shemesh is in Israel. It's either in Dan or it's in Judah. Or it could be in Benjamin. It's right there in the south. So it's right over the border. It's not too near in Shiloh. How'd they respond when they saw the ark? Rufus is going.
They rejoiced.
They rejoiced, okay. This is a big deal. It'd been gone for 7 months. Everybody in Israel knew it was gone. Everybody knew we got beat bad by the Philistines. So this is a big deal. Who handled the ark?
The Levites.
The Levites, as they should. And they knew how to handle it without getting killed. How did the Philistines verify it was gone? They watched from a distance. Eyewitness. This is the rulers. They were sitting off in the distance. This was a cart, and it had the ark on it, and it wasn't covered, and it had a couple cows. And when they hit that cow on the back, it walked right down the road, right into Beth Shemesh. And they were watching to see what was going to happen. Was anybody going to do anything or not? And everybody was rejoiced, and Levites took it off. They put it on this big rock, which must have been a pretty big rock. And said, this is great. This is great. The ark is back. They sacrificed to God, or they sacrificed to cows. I'm assuming they sacrificed to God. So Beth Shemesh is jubilant because of the return of the ark. Moving a little bit farther in chapter 6, and the people of Beth Shemesh asked, who can stand in the presence of the Lord, this holy God? To whom will the ark go up from here? They sent messengers to the people of Kiriath Jearim, saying, the Philistines have returned the ark of the Lord. Come down and take it up to your town. Think there may be something going on? Why didn't they just want to keep it in Beth Shemesh? Can I ask that question? Did they plan to keep it? not for this, but they were having a pretty big party. You know why they didn't desire to keep it? Think they did something?
Did they feel it was evil?
Yeah. No, it wasn't evil. Did they do what they was evil? Yeah, it was something that God didn't want them to do. It's also in here. But God struck down some of the inhabitants of Beth Shemeth, putting 70 of them to death because they looked into the ark of the Lord. The people mourned because of the heavy blow the Lord had dealt them. And the people of Beth Shemesh asked, "Who can stand in the presence of the Lord, this holy God, to whom the ark go up here from here?" Kind of sounds like the Philistines. They went, "There's the ark. Let's go open it up." I don't know if they got a stick and they poked it and opened it up so they could look in there and see what was in there. But they weren't supposed to look in there. 70 of them died. They went, "Let's get rid of this thing. Let's send it to another city." Kind of sounds like the Philistines. Did they approach the ark with reverence? No. They're still walking around thinking like it's a super weapon. So this is kind of the path it took. Started at Shiloh. Shiloh, they took it to Ebenezer. That's where they started the fight. They lost it at Ebenezer. Then the Philistines took it to Ashdod, then to Gath, then to Ekron. And you can see how close Ekron is to Beth Shemesh. It's just across the border between Israel and where the Philistines lived. And you can see at Kirith Jearim, it's that next one up between 7 and 8, is where it's going to go. And you can see where Shiloh is. 60, 40, maybe 45, maybe 50 kilometers away. So it's pretty far away. So now we're into chapter 7. So the men of Kirath Jearim came and took the ark of the Lord. They brought it to Abinadab's house on the hill and consecrated Eleazar, his son, to guard the ark of the Lord. The ark remained at Kirath Jearim a long time, 20 years in all. So it got as far as Kirath Jearim. What's not there? The ark's there. What's not there?
Everything goes with it.
Everything goes with it. The tabernacle. Where's the tabernacle?
Shiloh.
45, maybe even 50 kilometers away. So what's in the Holy of Holies?
Vacancy.
A stand. A room with a stand on it, with something that's supposed to go on the stand. Kind of tough to worship if God isn't there. So how's the ark being used? How are they using it at Kirath Jearim?
Probably using it as an idol, basically, at that point.
Might be an idol. What's Eliezer's job? A guard. It's kind of like a vault. They're using it like a vault, okay? We have this precious thing to Israel, and we're going to guard it. Nobody can get to it. Is that what God wanted? Not what he wanted. What's the spiritual effect on Israel that rang at Kirath Jearim? What do you do on the Day of Atonement?
Just don't do it.
You don't do it. There's no ark. There's nowhere for the priest to go in the Holy of Holies. So that's going to be detrimental as far as the spiritual wellness of the people of Israel. Which gets us to our lesson. How long is it there? 20 years. So Samuel would be somewhere in his late 30s, probably. Stayed 7 months. You know, Samuel was 14, 15, maybe as old as 18 before the ark left. That was back in chapter 3. It was in with the Philistines for 7 months. Now it's been here for about 20 years. Kind of do that math all up. He's somewhere 34 to 38, somewhere in that age frame. That's how old Samuel is. Then all the people turned back to the Lord. So Samuel said to the Israelites, if, that's a big if you are returning to the Lord with all your hearts, then rid yourselves of foreign gods, the Asherahs, and commit yourselves to the Lord, and serve him only, and he will deliver you out of the hands of the Philistines. So the Israelites put away their Baals and Asherahs, and served the Lord only. Then Samuel said, assemble all Israel at Mizpah, and I will intercede with the Lord for you. When they had assembled at Mizpah, they drew water and poured it out before the Lord. On that day they fasted, and there they confessed, we have sinned against the Lord. Now Samuel was serving as leader of Israel at Mizpah. So you have a spiritual awakening being led by Samuel. Why'd they turn back to the Lord?
Were they afraid?
Nothing else was working. They came to a realization because they had a real spiritual leader, didn't they? Was Eli a spiritual leader? Were Hophni and Phinehas spiritual assets? No, but Samuel was. People were probably still coming to the temple year after year. And who are they interfacing with for that 20 years? The book is named after him. Samuel. Samuel was talking with God. Samuel was showing what it is to be spiritual. And so over those 20 years, these people had come around to saying, we know now who this God is that we heard about because of Samuel. Because God worked through Samuel.
In a whole generation like that, I mean, we can see that same way here. You lose, like that, their worship was interrupted, they weren't doing it that way.
They were.
In a whole generation, we'd have trouble reestablishing that. Very drastically, we would have trouble reestablishing what God wants.
It would be very difficult, and if you didn't have someone that had that spiritual strength, that they could lead the people in the right direction, it's pretty easy to get somebody in there that's charismatic and going to lead them down the wrong path. And certainly that's talked about in the New Testament with the Gnostics that were leading people down the wrong path and the Jews that were leading people down the wrong path. What did they have to turn away from? What'd you say?
Foreign gods.
Baal and Asherah. Baal was the male, Asheroth was the female. She was fertility, what came out of the ground. He was the male, he was rain and sunshine that made everything grow. And so you can see being an agrarian society, that was a big deal. Okay, so they adopted the foreign gods to say, that's what makes our crops grow, is worshiping Asheroth and Baal. Now they figured out, no, that's not what makes our crops grow. God's what makes our crops grow. Why do you think he assembled at Mizpah? Do you know where Mizpah is? No, I didn't either. I had to look it up. Right on the border with the Philistines. Imagine that. So he has the ark. It's kind of on a mountain. It's kind of a high area. Right on the border, gathers all of Israel, burn all the gods that they have. There's thousands of Israelites there, massed on the border at Mizpah, the Philistines. What do you think the Philistines are going to think? We beat them 20 years ago, we can do it again. When the Philistines heard that Israel had assembled at Mizpah, the rulers of the Philistines came back to attack them. When the Israelites heard of it, they were afraid because of the Philistines. They said to Samuel, do not stop crying out to the Lord our God for us, that he may rescue us from the hand of the Philistines. Then Samuel took a suckling lamb and sacrificed it as a whole burnt offering to the Lord. He cried out to the Lord on Israel's behalf, and the Lord answered him. So, didn't go unnoticed. Philistine says, okay, they need another lesson. Let's go give them a lesson. What'd they do? They attacked. Let's attack. Why did the Israelites react the way they did? How strong was their faith? Yeah, Samuel's faith was strong, but their faith was pretty thin at this particular point. They didn't know whether God was going to, how God, they'd never seen God deliver them. Probably a generation had never seen God deliver them from a fight, because Samuel is the last judge, and he's the prophet as well. He's not the last prophet, but he is the last judge. And so they, you got to go back to quite a ways to get back some of the other judges that went through and defeated the Philistines. What was Samuel's response?
He made a sacrifice.
He made a sacrifice. He petitioned God. He said, God, we're depending on you. And he says, don't deliver us a great weapon. He said, we're depending on you to defend us. They were crying after their idols, that's true. Now they were saying, hey, the God has to be with us. We know we can't beat them ourselves, because they never have. What was the Lord's response, and why? He answered him. Why did he answer him? It's in here. Their heart. Their heart had changed. Their heart was towards God. This wasn't a convenience. They had burned the Asherah poles. They'd broken down the statues of Baal. And they said, we're turning back to God, and we know we've sinned against him. Their heart had changed. And that's what he was looking for. While Samuel was sacrificing the burnt offering, the Philistines grew near to engage Israel in battle. But that day, the Lord thundered with loud thunder against the Philistines and threw them into such a panic that they were routed before the Israelites. The men of Israel rushed out of Mizpah and pursued the Philistines, slaughtering them along the way to a point below Beth Kar. I never could find Beth Kar, but it's in the direction from Mizpah to back to where the Philistines live, somewhere. How was the battle won? By God.
Thunder.
Well, God's thunder that confused them. And when they went into a panic, what did they do? Well, who they were killing?
Each other.
Okay, has this happened before? Yeah. God's done this before, where the enemy was set into a panic and started killing each other, which is exactly what the Philistines started doing. They went into such a panic, if it moved, kill it. Why did he intervene then this time, but not last time, when 34,000 Israelites got killed?
Well, in reality, God always wants to intervene, but it's got to be done in the right way, because nothing else works.
It was their heart. Doug was pointing to his heart. It was their hearts. Their hearts weren't for God when those 34,000 were killed. Their hearts were saying, I got to go get the super weapon so we can go beat these Philistines. They weren't depending on God. They're depending on themselves, and their heart was not towards God, because they weren't giving up their gods. They weren't giving up Baal. They weren't giving up the Asherah pole. That was the big difference.
That's the cycle throughout the judges, though.
It is.
They stop following God. He lets the neighbors come in. Then they say, you know, things were better when we follow God. And as they turn back to God, he sends a redeemer, he's a reformer, he sends a judge, and they beat the neighbors, and they follow God, and they got this big circle.
It's a big cycle that they keep going through, and they've gone through it again with Samuel here.
That's the story of mankind.
That's true. But it says how critical your heart is when you approach God. If your heart's not towards him, it's not going to do you much good. How did Israel respond when they saw it? They said, okay. And they attacked. And they chased them all the way to Beth Kar, wherever that is. Then Samuel took a stone and set it between Mizpah and Shen. He named it Ebenezer, saying, Thus far the Lord has helped us. So the Philistines were subdued, and they stopped invading Israel's territory. Throughout Samuel's lifetime, the hand of the Lord was against the Philistines. So for the rest of Samuel's life, the Philistines were going to lose every time. And up until that particular time, they were getting beat regularly. The Philistines could go over there and just beat them whenever they wanted to. Why was the hand of the Lord against the Philistines?
Because they're fishing.
Well, he didn't like that, but the Philistines went constantly, they got this little strip between the Mediterranean and Israel. That's where they live. That's where Palestine is. That's where the area is that they live, that's between the PLO and the Israelites today that are always fighting. It's just to the west of Israel. And they're always trying to expand east. And it doesn't work out for them very well, at least underneath Samuel being a prophet and a judge of God. That was one of the unique things we talked about last time, was Samuel was a prophet and a judge for God. And because people were faithful and their heart was towards God, God was against the Philistines. Okay. Because of what Samuel did here, we would call him a
spiritual leader,
a judge. So this is a spiritual leader and a prophet of God, because God talks to him, we talked about earlier. This is where you see Samuel as a judge of God as well. And the fact that he was an effective judge throughout his entire lifetime, and he lived a long, long time, the Philistines were never successful in attacking the Israelites. Next week, Doug picks up again, and we begin to get more into Samuel and Samuel's interaction with the people of Israel and bringing them closer and closer to God. Questions? I haven't heard any of the bells. That clock says we're out of time. Thank you.
Thank you.
No bells?